Hello, 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 everybody. And it's another marvelous Monday with Common Sense Uncensored. And we've got a great show for you today. But the first thing I want to remind you is that if you'd like to buy some GFBS merchandise, go to GFBSmerch.com. You, as always, can follow us on Rumble, Facebook, and all the other places where GFBS is live and later for recording. If you have any questions or comments, make sure to call or text 701-213-0863. And we have a return guest today. We have Mr. Derek Sherwood in the house. And Derek, when he was here last time, was talking to us about having some issues with finding some equality in the judicial system. And that is always, always a fun, fun topic for us these days. Derek, how are you?
Great, ma'am. Thanks again for having me back. It's a great pleasure to be here again.
No problem. Now, just to catch people up, could you give us the beginning of your story? And it's a divorce story, but it's more than that because it involves some guns, and they're more than just guns. They're family heirlooms and stuff. So take us to the beginning, please.
So rewinding and kind of reiterating a little bit of what we talked about the last time, back in May of 2022, there was some false accusations of domestic violence, which caused a domestic violence protection order to get placed on me, which in turn allowed the sheriff's office, I use that term allowed loosely, but was ordered by Judge Romanek at the time to have my firearms confiscated from a neutral party's third home and be placed in the sheriff's office. My fight continued against this protection order because it is a false protection order. The accusations are completely false. And we continued to fight this. There was three other hearings, eventually leading to a complete dismissal of basically anything that I argued, which led me to take this to Bismarck and appeal it in front of the North Dakota Supreme Court. And sadly, that did not go as planned either.
Well, let me just tell everybody, you have a clean record. You are clean. You're in the military, and your record is clean, and there were no charges that came out of this.
Correct.
At all. So
violence charges were completely dismissed.
So if the domestic charges are violence charges are dismissed, why are you still without your guns?
Well, that would be a great question for the state's attorney and the Grand Forks County Sheriff. But at the same time, under federal law, 18 U.S.C. 922 G8, it restricts people from possessing firearms within if you have a finding or a protection order that says you're violent, basically.
So, okay, you're going to have to help me along with this because if there have been no charges, if the domestic violence charge was found to have no merit, that should have resolved, in my mind, everything. Because you're being punished for something that not only you did not do, which you still avow, but you weren't even found guilty of.
Correct. And the problem here comes from, so you've got criminal and civil courts. Domestic violence protection orders are civil actions and actions that are civil in nature, meaning you are not afforded any of the same constitutional rights that you would be afforded in a criminal trial. You do not have a right to a trial by right to a trial by jury. You do not have a right to an attorney. You really honestly don't have the right to remain silent because you have to get up there and defend these protection or defend yourself against these protection orders and defend yourself against the charges. The problem is with these protection orders being that they're civil in nature, they convict people and they convict people on a federal level without a trial by jury. Now, granted, it is what I would consider maybe a temporary conviction, but it is still a conviction nonetheless because it allows judges to make a pure speculation on your character, just a mere speculation on your character, and use a preponderance of the evidence, which means, okay, well, we think this is what happened, not a beyond a reasonable doubt standard. It is a preponderance of the evidence, so a 50-50, whatever the judge feels like that day.
So this actually astounds me because I'm no lawyer, but I've studied, and the law is supposed to be blind. And therefore, in other words, the translation of that is that I am not supposed to allow my own emotions as a judiciary to become involved in this. I'm supposed to look at the law. You have not been convicted of any crimes. Therefore, I do not understand how someone can allow their emotions to say you do not appear to be of good character to allow that to influence their judgment. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and it goes into when you're sitting in a courtroom, they talk about credibility. That's the big thing that you hear in any courtroom is they're talking about, well, especially with a preponderance of the evidence standard case, it is about your credibility. Yet the judges don't know me. They don't know the opposing side either, but it is a speculation on, well, we have this little tiny small snippet and we think you're a bad guy.
I also am probably going to get thrown bricks at, but I also think it has to do with, ooh, you're a big bad male and she's a sweet little girly. And I'm sorry if you can hear the sarcasm dripping off my voice, but I don't believe that gender should be entering into this.
It should not. Because I mean, that's equal protection.
Right.
14th Amendment. We can go down that road all day long. It should not. However, it does. Specifically at district court levels, I believe that is very much you see that more prevalent, specifically in divorce, custody. You talk about protection order cases. I mean, yes, there is a very small snippet of females that you know, are held to the same standards, probably because they actually really did something. And usually it takes a significant more amount of evidence to prove that. But
yeah,
there are also a significant amount of men that have protection orders that have stacks of evidence, like myself, that this is not a valid thing, and they don't have to do anything. The other side doesn't have to do anything. And all they have to do is say, well, I'm scared.
Well, it seems to me incredibly unjust because we're seeing some of this play out in national politics as well. The he said, she said thing has gotten to be extremely bizarre in my estimation, because if you have no preponderance of evidence, there's no other people coming forward to corroborate that it happened to them, there's no little blue dress, there's nothing that has any actual concrete evidence except she said, to me you have no case.
Exactly. And that would be how it's supposed to work. Like, you, if there is no evidence, no hard evidence other than your word with no witnesses, that should not be this case should be dismissed before it even starts.
Now, this is going to sound a little funky, but had you actually done something and caused some harm, would you have been at a better place because you would have been able to have a jury and everything else? Because I'm just saying, because I know you didn't, but it seems to me almost if you'd actually been a criminal, you would have fared better.
You know, I actually don't agree. I would actually say that it would have been worse.
Okay.
Because, you know, it would have been a lot worse because they would have thrown the book at me. They would, and if we were say take your scenario of just say this actually did happen, right? Say we go into trial, say we take it to a jury trial. All they would have had to do to convince a jury was to say, I have a protection order. This is the finding of fact by one judge. You must also find him guilty. It leaves you no option to get out of it. You are in a trap.
Wow.
You are trapped in a corner, and you have no. But and this all happens. These protection orders get ran through in 14 days. They have 14 days for a hearing to get that. Criminal trials can take months to get to court. So all this happens. So you got specifically in this case, we had the protection order hearing. We had the divorce hearing where the judge didn't make a finding of fact, but of domestic violence, but he made a lot of very poor decisions in the interim hearing, which is a temporary order hearing, and again effectively convicted me again without giving me that right to trial by jury. Those things should be completely separate.
I just don't understand it, and the reason I really don't understand it is because I know a lot of people, male and female, who use less than stellar tools during divorces, mm-hmm, to get what they want, whether it's custody, alimony, whatever, including accusing one or the other of molestation, abuse, yada, yada. And it doesn't seem to me like there's a lot in the judiciary that's even willing to attempt to figure out how much of this is manipulation versus righteous condemnation.
And there's not. And it's, you know, specifically, like, again, I'm going to use my case as an example. Mm-hmm. And my case is the definition of the horror story divorce, where there's false accusations. There's there's, you know, a lot of money on the table at the time. And that's really, I think you said it on this show before, for follow the money. You know, and that's exactly what happens here. So all that money, where is it getting funneled to? Because even if they do take all my money and give it to the other person, they're going to have attorney fees to pay. So that it doesn't, and with the judges, they don't get, they don't see the whole picture. They don't. And they're not in a position to see the whole picture, because they don't get to see how you interact with your kids. They don't get to see how you interact with people on a daily basis. They don't know anything about you except what the other person's telling you and what you're trying to, and you're obviously not going to tell a judge that, well, yeah, I'm a bad dude. You know, I mean,
it's, no, so. but the thing is too, is that it's, as you said today, it seems to be just automatically guilt by mail, that the males are the violent, the ones, the obviously the predators or whatever. And I have to tell you, from spending 68 years inside a female body, tain't necessarily so, because I have seen a lot of females who are quite capable of not just chicanery with accusations, but hellacious violence.
Yeah, and that is far too not uncommon, where you will see a guy defend himself because a female is beating the crap out of him, and he may do something, just shove her away. Sorry, it's over for him. He'll be the one in handcuffs that day.
See, and I don't agree with that at all. And I'm fairly small in stature, but I'm a very strong female. And I've always been very conscious of the fact that I am strong, and that I was raised in an era where guys don't hit girls. But I also know that doesn't necessarily happen. But a strong female, or even a small female, can do a lot of damage. As you said, if a guy's just going to, I don't understand why a person should be expected to just stand there, and because it's a female coming after them, just take it. I don't get it.
I mean, there's no explanation for that, because I mean, we've got rights to self-defense, but you're afraid to defend.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that can expand into a lot of different realms. You know, I mean, not just a male-female dynamic. I mean, that's anywhere. I mean, I've heard stories from home state of New York, where a robber fell through a roof, broke his leg, restrained by the homeowner, and now the homeowner's in jail.
Yeah, I understand. I'm going to take a real quick break here for Oh for Heaven's Cakes, and then when I get back, I'm going to share a story, and then we're going to get back to Derek's story. Oh for Heaven's Cakes, and there is nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods, and that's where Oh for Heaven's Cakes comes in. You'll find the best cupcakes and cakes for any special occasion or just a treat. Walk in to find out more, but I'm warning you, you won't want to leave, and you certainly won't leave empty-handed. Oh for Heaven's Cakes is located on the north back side of the Grand Cities Mall. They're open Tuesdays through Friday from 10 to 4, Saturdays from 9 to noon. Give them a call at 701-757-CAKE, that is 701-757-2253, or you can email them at oforheavenscakes@yahoo.com, and you can be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins at Oh for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. And we have Phyllis saying, they act like they've been there for the entire relationship. I'm not quite sure what that means. Phyllis, can you give us a little bit more on that one? While we're talking about civil cases, there is a great example here I'm going to give you. There's a nasty divorce case out of Chicago that has put a man behind bars for 18 months, despite what he says is a clean criminal record, all right? This is the case of Illinois native Steve Fandy, who's 59, who's been in a Cook County jail cell in solitary confinement for 18 months over an unresolved divorce settlement. This is a 14-year-old divorce settlement, people, and he's been ordered to pay $10 million. Now, he doesn't have $10 million, but this is funny because right now in this county, there is the Safety Act, which eliminates cash bail, allowing inmates who are not deemed flight risks to be released pretrial. The provision applies to those charged with violent crimes such as murder, rape, armed robbery, and aggravated assault. All right. But this gentleman doesn't have it apply to him because he's not a criminal. He is, again, civil trial. And so what happened is 14 years ago when he got divorced, his wife left him to keep his stock, but she pursued his partner's stock. And when she failed in that attempt, now she's back 14 years later, and she wants $10 million or transfer of 120,000 shares of his stock. And if he does not do this, he will be fined in indirect civil contempt. And his ex-wife wrote the judgment, and it looks like they're going to try to back that. This makes no sense.
And it doesn't, but this goes back into exactly a civil conviction versus a criminal conviction. There is a distinct difference, and even in the Constitution, there is a difference. I mean, I think back in I can't remember the original amendment, but I know you could sue somebody for $20,
right?
Back then, which would be great nowadays, but yeah, there is a distinction between civil and criminal, as there should be. However, what they're doing is instead of having that high wall of separation, which I've heard, which has been used by the Supreme Court for multiple reasons, they're not having any separation at all. As soon as you don't do something when it's regard to your judgment, you're going to jail. It's that simple. But that's not how it should work.
And Phyllis just got back to me with more information. She says judges create an entire narrative based off one event, and they use that to paint whatever they want. And that's exactly what's happening right now. And it seems to me that there are not many divorces that are going to be equitable or civil. Hence, you know, I'm sorry, but divorces rarely are. And what you want to be looking at this is understanding that you need to take a person's life besides this snapshot, because this is a snapshot of turmoil. And I doubt anybody is going to be able to say during this period of turmoil, they're completely right.
There's something you said, and I want to back up to it. You said it's an equitable divorce. The one thing that you under the law, which I'm not saying whether this is good, bad, and different, but under the law, equitable does not mean equal. That especially in divorce. I mean, you can tell, if you get to keep a house, you can figure all your bank accounts are gone.
Right.
You know, because that's equitable.
Yeah.
It's really not, because they're not looking into, and again, I will use mine. I lost $56,000 in my divorce effectively. That's not including the attorney fees. And they're saying that's equitable because I got a house that the opposing party did not want.
Right.
I mean, and really, if you're going to divide it, it should be equal.
It should be based on something that's important to you.
Correct.
Not, I don't want the house, I want the money.
Right.
Because the money is important to me. And therefore, even if you don't want the house, I want the money. So, you see, this is the thing, is there's no rational thought that seems to come into these things at all. There was an anonymous comment that came through. It says, beat up on the guy, and when he tries to stop, flop faster than a soccer player. Well, and that's the truth.
And that's exactly what the court wants to see. There are, and again, I want to make it clear. I am not saying that protection orders do not have their place, specifically in the state of North Dakota. There are valid cases. In my Supreme Court briefing, I cited Schultz versus Schultz, where a woman who was brutally beaten got a protection order in a case like this. This makes absolute and total sense. There was also a conviction of domestic violence to follow that protection order. You do not have a conviction here, except for on the civil side. That's it. But there, in the Schultz v. Schultz case, there is a conviction. There is hard evidence that says, yes, this is a violent person to warrant a protection order.
Well, and I want people to understand something, too. I try not to get real personal here, but I went through a bad breakup where I was stalked. And the person was in a position where, had I got a protection order, his livelihood would have been over. If he was not able to have a gun, mm-hmm. it wasn't going to work well for his livelihood. And because I was adulting, I said, okay, this doesn't make sense, because once the emotions and stuff have wrapped themselves and gone away, the fact that I've destroyed somebody is going to be ridiculous. So I chose not to go that route, but it seems to me that, you know, I understand the need for protection orders, and I understand the need for screaming domestic violence, both of which I probably should have done. But it seems to me that people are doing this now without any basis, and it's an automatic. So if people are thinking that I've never been in a situation, so I don't get it, I call foul, because, yeah, I have.
Yeah, I mean, it is basically automatic the way I see it. Specifically, and I would like to call out specifically Civic on this.
Yes.
Because these people who are going after protection orders are coached into this. Not only that, they're also coached by attorneys, too. And I am not saying all attorneys are bad. I know a few good ones, quite a few good ones. But there are attorneys that are out there coaching, and Civic is probably one of the biggest problems. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's here. Community Violence Intervention Center. Thank you. These people are coaching this because why? It helps you in the divorce, because all the judge has to see is there's a protection order and you're done. Because then that falls into custody battles where they start getting into the best interest factors. And one of those factors is involving domestic violence. If you have that one, if you lose that, your custody case is over with.
Well, and I have nothing against the CVIC, but I will make a point that they serve a purpose, but they also benefit from the fact of having to do handoffs for families, have supervised visitation. Because they're establishing a need that they can continue to fill.
Right.
So they're not neutral parties.
They're not.
And the other thing that I will also say is we did, when I was a teacher, we actually put together a marketing plan for them, and that involved a entire semester's work with my students. And we went through this whole thing, and the one thing I noticed about them is they're intrinsically female-based.
Yeah.
And I kept bringing up the fact that violence is not just one-sided, that there should be availabilities at the facilities there for the alternative, which would be the male not being the aggressor, et cetera, et cetera. And the students understood it immediately. Yep. But when we went to present the marketing plan, I won't say that they were negative, but I would definitely make the comment that they hadn't expected that angle.
Yeah, and you know, speaking on, I mean, it's definitely not on that angle, but I mean, you can also see it where I know somebody personally here in this county that applied for services as a male through that organization, and they got denied, and they had significant proof that the domestic violence was on the other side.
See, and gender to me should not be an issue. If you've got a situation where you need to have a safe place to hand off your kids, whatever, than that, it should not matter if you're the dad or the mom. Isn't it supposed to be about the freaking kids?
And yes, it absolutely should. And that was the big focus of everything. And that is always in anything that I am doing, that is always my number one focus. How does this affect the kids? The kids are the most important part, and people need to learn that divorces, specifically the best interest factors, are not for the kids. We need to start pushing 50-50 parenting laws in any state. And I am half tempted to say federally too. I think this needs to be taken out of the state's hands because they can't get it right. I know there are a lot of states trending in that direction to do 50-50, but there is still a significant majority that don't, including the state of North Dakota that uses these best interest factors. And the best interest factors are not in the best interest. It's literally, well, we're going to start with mom. How good are you? Okay, you're not bad. So, Dad, sorry.
Well, Phyllis mentioned something about the Seventh Amendment.
Yes. The Seventh and 14th Amendments come into play on us. You know, where actually I would argue, and there's not a lot of case law on this, but I would argue that the best interest factors are unconstitutional because it doesn't give you equal protection under the law. It also doesn't take into factors that the children are also citizens of the United States and they are not getting equal protection. They're not. And then you could start bringing it. Well, they could say, well, what about a guardian ad litem or a parenting coordinator? They absolutely, that's their protection. Well, I'm sorry, but guardian ad litems and parenting coordinators are also equally unconstitutional because now that makes the court a third party in this.
Correct.
Because they are agents of the court. That means the court is now a party. Now you don't have a neutral judiciary at all.
So what you've literally got then is the court now is taking the job of the parent.
Correct.
Superseding both parents, but usually favoring one.
Correct. And that's, and like I said, we all know, we've learned this in high school, courts are a neutral party. They're not. They're absolutely not. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact, specifically here in North Dakota, that North Dakota has a law where in order to be a judge, you have to be a lawyer.
Paul mentioned something here, and it's absolutely true. He said they claim 50-50 is confusing. Yep. To the kids, and they need a yep. permanent home, and the other parent gets visitation. I'm sorry, but bull.
Yeah, and you will hear that so many times that well, 50-50 is confusing. It's not. It's not. And I stated this the last time I was here. Kids want their father. Kids want their mother. They don't understand this court stuff. I barely understand it, and I'm doing it. But at the same time, the kids have no idea. Sure, mom and dad don't get along, get a divorce. That's great. Great. But having them live in two separate homes is not confusing.
No.
The first time I picked up my kids on after all the other crap that happened, they missed their dad. You know, and that's facts. Like, they missed their dad. And when they got back to North Dakota, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm home again.
You know? It's not about the house.
It's
the
not.
The kids aren't missing the house.
They're not.
The bedroom. It's about the parent.
Exactly. And when you restrict and you start putting and kind of tying this back into these protection orders, they restrict your rights to parents too. Because we are on the third amended protection order here, because the first one had the kids included. And based off her agreement, they dropped the kids off. Then it was a second protection order which brought your second amended protection order. That was when we filed action. And then the third order allowed me to have my firearms back. So we have, but these protection orders just restrict, unless you're the person who has it. But then you have all the control. And that is how you dominate a court, is you have control over the other party, which I would strongly argue is undue influence.
Well, and it seems to be kind of funny because the first one involved your kids and stuff.
Yep.
And everything else. It's very confusing to me, so you're going to have to tell me if I get this wrong. But so you had your guns taken away because of your wife and your kids, and then it was amended. Now, was she amending those or was the court amending those?
The court was amending based on her request.
Okay. Right?
Even though we were going after trying to get that anyways.
Right.
But it's a tactic to, well, I'm a reasonable person. So when it goes into the other legal battles, the divorce, they look more reasonable, right? And it's I would call it a dirty tactic. I really would.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into this a little bit deeper, but the first thing I need to do is, Paul, are you ready for executive properties?
Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Diane says Executive Properties did a roof project and remodeled a bathroom in our house. We were happy with their quality of work, and the projects were completed in a timely manner. We will use Executive Properties for our next home project. Get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273.
And they're saying we're going to have some snow this weekend. So if you need them, give them a call, 701-330-1273. I'm going to just throw some statistics out here. The United States is third in murders throughout the world. But if you take out Chicago, Detroit, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, the United States is fourth from the bottom for murders, all right? So our rank would be 189 out of 193. So someone's got to tell me why all of these gun things, taking away everybody's guns because somebody's a little pissy and a divorce is making sense, because I'm missing it.
Yeah, and if you look at those stats that you're talking about coming from the big cities, they're some of the ones with the heaviest guns restrictions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it correlates heavy, and you can look at England and Australia also with that too. Too, when they had their firearms bans on how crime skyrocketed. So there is a direct correlation with the right to bear arms and the lack of crime.
Well, and no offense to anybody, because I do get it, because emotions run high during divorces and everything else, but this continuation process. So let's say I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I could say, all right, it's a divorce. Emotions are running high. So I can go along with taking your guns for the first round. But this second, third, this just sounds to me like we got you down. Now we're going to kick you.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. I think the term that I would use is they're trying to wear you down. And I think both sides probably try to do the same thing. But if you don't get that first shot in, you're done. Like, and that's why I would strongly encourage people that if they are going to file action in the court, you have a lot better advantage if you're caught, if you're the one bringing the action to court. There, if you're the plaintiff, if you are the one who is filing the action, if you get it in first, because you got to get that first shot, because that sets the whole tone towards how most cases go. And I know that sounds
it really doesn't weird. Sound good at
and
all
it doesn't sound good at all, because really, as a plaintiff, if you look at the theory of how the United States courts are supposed to work, the plaintiff, yes, they bring the claim, okay, cool, that's your claim, that's your complaint. There still should be a lot of rights for the defendant, but it's not. And it goes back to, once they file that claim, especially in divorce court, where now as a defendant you're basically guilty until proven innocent.
That's what I was just going to say, is it sounds to me that whoever gets in first is innocent, yep, and the other guy's just an evil, yep, SOS. And I'm just sitting here going, and I've been divorced, in case anybody's wondering about it, a long time ago, galaxy far, far away. But it never made sense to me to go. You supposedly loved somebody, mm-hmm, at some point. Why the vindictiveness, and why the... Your guns meant a lot to you. They're, yep, family heirlooms. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about 9mm that you just picked off the shelf here. And so that was a real hit.
Yeah, it was. And I think it's because the hit stopped coming. Because like when you got to with the agreement of the divorce, one of the things we wrote in the divorce was that the plaintiff in my case would not object to me returning my firearms. Okay, that's fine and dandy. Great, cool. That tells me a lot right there, for one. That tells me, why would you, if you're so scared, why would you allow the person who you're scared of to get something?
Their guns back.
But then what was even worse is the judge actually agreed to that. It's wrote in the protection order to return my firearms. So now the Grand Forks County Sheriff, under advice from the state's attorney, Haley Wamstad, says that because of this 922 G8, you can't. The federal law. So that and then the Supreme Court made some ridiculous rulings when we appealed this, specifically getting into that, where they said, well, North Dakota law is not the problem here, which it is. 922 G8 only says you can't possess them. There is nothing in 922 G8 that says you can take them. North Dakota Century Code says you must put them in the sheriff's office for safekeeping. That is confiscation. That I, and there is nobody who can convince me otherwise that this law is probably the one of the most unconstitutional laws I've seen. And we challenged that. And the Supreme Court basically dismissed it without merits.
So according to the way it was, if I'm going to interpret it, you could have got your guns back. They maybe just could not have been on your premises.
Correct.
You could have had them stored someplace else.
Correct. That is exactly correct. Now, and I would have done that. I don't want the sheriff to have my guns. I don't feel the sheriff is allowed to keep my guns, because you also have Governor Burgum's proclamation of North Dakota is a sanctuary state for firearms. They're enforcing a federal law when under proclamation from the governor, we should not be.
See, this is a really confusing case for me, because it seems to be that the law is the law until I want to interpret it
Correct.
This way. And that is not... Well, it is. It's judiciary malfeasance.
Yes, yes. And in this case, I can break this case down in a way, and there's really two words: judicial activism.
Right.
That is exactly how this case, specifically at the Supreme Court, it became. They wrote things into a law, specifically with protection orders. They said that, well, if you want to extend your protection order, you don't have to have a new finding of fact. Which means they don't have to reprove that this happens. There is nowhere, not one word about that in the North Dakota Century Code regarding that.
So literally, for a civil case, a divorce, you can be found guilty almost in perpetuity, if I can say it right, guilty for freaking ever until somebody on their high horse decides, okay, You're safe now.
I think he's had enough. Is basically, I think he's learned his lesson, or however they want to word it. But you're correct. That's exactly what it is. You are guilty without a trial by jury. Yes, you may not be sitting behind bars with it, but at the same time, you're convicted of other things, and you are treated the same way with these domestic violence protection orders that somebody who's actually committed domestic violence. It's the same. They're not allowed to have firearms. They're not allowed to do certain restrictions. There's already an automatic protection order driven on that end. But then you get a domestic violence protection order. Sure, you can live your life as free as you want, except for your firearms.
Well, we just saw in the Chicago case that you can even be put in jail, and for something that's 14 years old. So that says to me that this could come back to bite you later on out of nowhere, because somebody wants more money or whatever.
Yep.
It can just rear its ugly head again.
Yeah, and it can. And it really can. Luckily, I think in my case, I think it's very unlikely that's happened, because the division of property is already done. But I mean, there could be more with that later, but I doubt it. But at the same time, there are people who have to go through that, where it's, well, running a little low on cash, so he just did really good for himself. And that's another problem that comes out of these things is if you're on I don't know if the term losing side is right, because I don't think anybody really
Not in
wins
a divorce.
In a divorce. But if you're on the losing side, right, but, you get out of that hole and you do better for yourself, and your life becomes a lot better. Well, hey, this guy's making, 10 grand a month. Well, now I get to go after that too.
Well, the other thing too is the, you mentioned that they're heirlooms and things, and those appreciate.
Yep.
And so somebody who maybe is feeling that they today didn't get the best deal that they could have.
Yep.
Could grab a hold of a lawyer and say, I didn't know what he had.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get the accurate value.
Right.
Therefore, I want my piece of the pie.
Yep. And you're not wrong. They could absolutely do that. They absolutely could.
And so this is never, ever over.
It's not. And like I said, I don't think divorces are ever really over.
No, I agree. Especially if there's kids.
Yeah, especially if there's kids. And usually, I guess if you could say it's over with is after the kids are of legal age to do things. Because, I mean, I think the general trends that I've seen is usually, okay, by that point, nobody cares at this point. But at the same time, that's not always the case either. Like you can litigate a divorce forever effectively.
That is wrong on so many levels. And the fact that, and I'm not saying anything bad against the sheriff's department here, but I have to think that would not be a terribly necessary, let's say they're in the evidence locker. Mm-hmm. Crap disappears from there all the time.
I know. It's a big concern. it's a very big concern in this case, and specifically where I was never actually told which evidence locker this stuff was in, but I found out a judge, I think, briefly mentioned it, and I was like, okay, well, it's here, but
on paper,
yeah, exactly. And the other problem is it's not just firearms; it's ammunition too. Like it's firearms and ammunition that you're restricted from under these laws.
So literally, right now, we have brothers right next door here. Mm-hmm. You're pretty much, you can go in and look. That's
about it. I can go in and look, but if it was to go in and purchase right now, that can't happen.
Now I gotta. This is what really just absolutely slays me. Is I'm not going to mention the branch or whatever, but you're in the military, which means you're around hundreds of millions of dollars of equipment and stuff, and quite frankly, all kinds of stuff that can harm you in lots and lots of ways. Mm-hmm. But you aren't able to go buy a box of 9mm.
Correct. Absolutely correct. I mean, just let that one stew for a little bit.
Okay, so God forbid, crap hits the fan. Whatever. We have a terrorist. We have whatever. You're supposed to stand around with your thumb in your ear?
I guess so. That's what they want. I mean, that's really what they want. And we can expand this on a lot of different levels. We know about the federal government wanting control firearms, and this is one way that they do that.
Now, you went to the Supreme Court and stuff, and I know that this, you know, you did a lot of research, so the amount of hours that you put, if you had to estimate, how many hours can you even get a grasp on it?
I couldn't even get it. I mean, it was every night if I had to ballpark it, it was literally every night from when I filed in the Supreme Court of June to the actual hearing in December. So, I mean, you're talking hours, and I do encourage people to do pro se stuff. I can tell you right now, you can save yourself a ton of money.
Oh gosh, yes.
But you know, at the same time, it's not that hard to do pro se. You just got to learn to read and do some thinking.
But, well, I'll admit, I've only been divorced once, and it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But I did my own.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to do.
No, it wasn't. It's,
the problem is the complications that and arbitrary rules that the court comes up with. I mean, like, you've got Rule 44, which we had to enact in this case because we were challenging the constitutionality of law, a facial challenge, no less, which means we have to notify the state's attorney. I would have never known that if an attorney didn't tell me, hey, you need to enact this in order to challenge this.
Now, you did this not just for you, but you did this because you had an idea that you are not the only person that's gone through this.
Correct.
And you are not the only person that you know is going to go through
Correct.
This.
Correct. And I've said that for a lot of things. I mean, yes, most of the things I do is for my kids, but the thing specifically under this protection order that I was challenging was to make sure that this stuff does not happen again for anybody else. I wish to all those people, anybody else is out there, I wish I could have done a better argument. I did the best I could, and I will say that. But and it wasn't bad. It was very solid, and there was no opposition. This should have been a slam dunk. It was not. There was no brief filed by the appellee in this case. The only other brief was filed was by the state's attorney, specifically the Solicitor General Philip Axt, and they didn't even argue. They just said, well, he doesn't have standing. And then they gave a three-prong attack at it where he didn't have standing. Well, if he does have standing, it needs to wait till after United States versus Rahimi is decided, which is exactly this case is in the Supreme Court, 922G8. That is what this whole thing is about, is it unconstitutional to have a protection order and not be allowed to have your firearms? And Rahimi is a very, very interesting case. And I mean, I could talk about Rahimi all day. And Zaki Rahimi, I don't believe that this case is going to win. I hate to say that, but I don't think it's going to win because Zaki Rahimi is not what it was even stated in the Fifth Circuit opinion. He's not considered a model citizen, but the Fifth Circuit got it right, overturned 922G8. The problem is that is not binding for North Dakota. We are Eighth Circuit. They don't have to abide by that opinion.
Well, I want to know more about that in a second. In fact, I want you to get into that. But I have to take my last break for Redemption Shield, and I want to tell everybody to make sure they go to GF Best Source. I got to get it right. GFBestSource.com. At the bottom of the homepage, and click on the Shield to order today, and you can get a discount. So go out and do that. Paul, take it away.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%. Redemptionshield.com.
It really, really works, people. I have a grounding pad next to my computer and I can feel it working. Okay. Zaki Rahimi. Of course, if I could butcher them both, I will.
Well, I mean, it's a hard one to butcher. So,
so tell me about this case, because it sounds like it could impact a lot of us.
Yeah, so the Rahimi case that's in the Supreme Court now has happened in Texas, where a man who had a protection order, and to the best of my understanding was he had a protection order, which means he wasn't allowed to have firearms, but he... he shot off a couple shots in a crowd somewhere and got thrown in jail, and they cited 922G8. His attorney appealed that. It got all the way to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit actually declared on its face 922G8 to be unconstitutional after the first time. So it was there twice in the Fifth Circuit. Okay. First one, they did it, but then there was some changes, and then they did another hearing, an en banc hearing on that, and they overturned it on its face. Immediately after, the United States filed action in Supreme Court, and they asked for a 2-week waiver. So I think that shows the gravity of how the federal government feels about 922G8, where it's important to them.
They're not fans.
They're not a fan. No, they're an absolute fan of 922G8 because they that's their control.
Right. That yeah. They don't want anybody to have access to anything that has to do with guns.
And 18 USC 922 in general, that whole code is also the one that restricts felons. It restricts criminals. Like there's a lot in 922G8. Like just the whole 922 section.
It's nothing but restricting your gun right, your Second Amendment rights.
I mean, it talks
about
transfer of firearms. Like there's a whole bunch of things that you like. I think that if I remember right, somewhere in there it says well if it's known stolen, you can't purchase it. Yeah, I know, it's great, right?
Oh God.
Yeah.
Well, only the government.
Only the government. Yeah, it's crazy.
Only the government.
Crazy, but I mean, this law is a very restrictive law, and there's portions where it's all right, probably on the verge of unconstitutional, but maybe not quite.
Great.
And specifically the 922G8 portion is the one that regulates domestic violence protection orders, and a lot of states have similar laws, including North Dakota, A lot of them involve confiscation, but that's not the point of 922G8. Nope, you just can't have them. All right, okay, we'll take that on its face there. But this Zaki Rahimi, being that he wasn't supposed to have a gun shot in a crowd, okay, probably not a responsible gun owner. And his case made it all the way to the Supreme Court. And if you listen to I've listened to the whole case, and if you have the chance, if you're interested in this, it takes a while, but listening to how Elizabeth Prelogger, the Solicitor General for the United States, delivered the argument versus Matt Wright. Matt Wright got beat up pretty good by the court, and in my analysis, and I'm not, I'm a political science major, but I'm not a legal scholar by any means. But from my analysis, it didn't sound good. Now that does not mean something good can't come out of it, but they're trying to prove, specifically getting back into New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, which is the one that's kind of opened up challenges to these laws, like the North Dakota Century Code. The government has the burden now to prove that these laws are legit.
Valid.
Yeah, and it has to happen in a historical context. The problem with that is how far back is the historical context? I would argue it's the signing of the Constitution.
They have muskets. This is muddying the water, and it has nothing to do with the actual amendment.
It does in a sense, but when you're starting to dig back into English law that drove this law here, it doesn't. And the problem with 922G8 is there is no historical context for that law. Same thing with North Dakota Century Code. These laws were created after 1997. There's no historical context. There's no context to say that yes, you have a protection order. You can have your gun. You can't have your guns.
The only context I can find that's a thread that goes through everything is take away their guns.
Yeah, and that is the thread. How do we do that? Well, we slap these ridiculous protection orders. Well, they can't have your guns. Got it. We're in North Dakota. Well, we'll take your guns. And that's the biggest issue with this is that it's all about restriction, and it's not just even restriction on firearms. We can talk about restrictions of other rights too. You probably do have a restriction on First Amendment speeches in a protection order. You have restrictions on your 14th because you're not getting your due process.
The thing that bothers me is when they get into things like, and they've been talking about this, you have family heirlooms. I have family heirlooms. Technically, if some of these laws pass, that will be illegal because they're not allowed to hand your guns down. You have to do background. I mean, this is insanity.
Correct. It is. And it's just getting worse. I wouldn't call myself a firearms law expert, but it doesn't take be a law expert to see what's going on here.
Well, I see these as opening the doors for stuff that is idiotic like this, you can't get grandpa's gun.
Yes.
And that what they're attempting to do is, because they can't go through the front door,
correct,
because every time they try to go through the front door, the Supreme Court goes, nah, you can't do that. So what they're doing is like the omnibus law, where they pack everything in. They'll have a law that says, well, for your safety, you know, we're going to do this. And then underneath it is all the garbage they can't get through. And then it passes as law.
Yeah. And a lot of times, a lot of these restrictions get put in as some pork to some, you know, thousand page law. I'm sorry, but even as a congressman, like, you're still a human, but you don't have time to read a 1,000-page law.
Well, and Phyllis just said, you know, if there's two parties living in the same house, and one is not allowed to have firearms, the resident of the same house. Now, I hadn't even thought of that.
That's another part of G8. Yeah, because it comes down to possession, right? Now, the person, say, like let's take a scenario here where somebody was convicted of a felony and they were living with somebody else. The other person's not allowed to have it either. Because not that anything would ever happen to that person that has the firearms. It would happen to the person who has the felony because they're not supposed to be in possession. But it opens the door for confiscation because it will bring about he's a felon. We have to check up on him. Nope, you got firearms here? Sorry, we're taking them.
So it's okay for us to infringe upon one individual's rights in our attempt to restrict this other individual's rights. This is, you're opening the door for an entire can of worms here.
It is. And the door, I'm sorry, but I've never seen in my life, and I don't know if I've been on this earth that long at 37 years, but I have never seen the door more wide open since I started going through this process of how easy it is for the government to take your guns. And not only take your guns, in this specific case, the firearms were already removed from the house. They were not in my home, which means they went into a neutral third party's home and confiscated my firearms.
See, and that's what I really don't understand is if the purpose is simply to separate you from your firearms, that had already been done.
Yes, and I think in the problem is possession. Okay, like that is a vague term. What defines possession? It doesn't mean, and that doesn't even have to be your firearms. Say we're going out in the woods. Say we're going out hunting, and my buddy says, well, I know your guns are in the sheriff's office. Here, borrow mine. That's possession. They could consider that possession.
So they could actually
yes.
take his gun.
They could take his gun, yes. And this is how wide open the 922 to U.S. code is. Like, there is nothing good about this. I mean, I know we don't want violent felons having guns. I get it. And I get it. And I know people are thinking, well, that's the problem. There is a way to tailor this law. This law is not narrowly tailored. There is nothing narrow about this. This is nothing but restriction, not only restriction, but also restriction on law-abiding citizens.
Well, the guy that just got done killing all of the first responders in Minnesota just recently here was not allowed to have firearms. How'd that work out?
I wish I could say I'm familiar with it, but I mean, it doesn't matter though, because based off the little bit I just heard, it doesn't matter. Criminals don't care about laws.
Exactly.
Simple. It's that simple. There's black market deals out there. And you can go, I mean, I know everybody talks about the gun show loophole. It's private sales.
Yes.
Like, you can go to somebody else, say, hey, I want to purchase your gun. That doesn't require an FFL transfer.
Well, the one in Minnesota where the fireman and the two cops got shot by the convicted felon who wasn't supposed to, his girlfriend went out and bought guns. So they're considering it a straw purchase and yada, yada. But I still have to say, the law was there, but did it work?
No.
So in the meantime, what's occurring is the same thing that occurs many other times with the Second Amendment, is the people that are law-abiding citizens are the ones that are facing the restrictions. Yep. The people that aren't don't care because they don't follow the laws anyway.
Right. And that couldn't have said it any better myself on that. Like, it's the law-abiding citizens who are having their rights restricted. And even the ones who, like, it's also the restriction from these orders that do not afford you your constitutional rights of a trial by jury, the right to attorney, the right to say nothing at all. You don't have a choice in these. And though it is those people who are getting hit, it's not the criminals. It's not. It's a very basic thing to say a criminal is going to get a gun if he wants to get a gun. If he wants to cause harm, he will cause harm. It's just that simple.
What really disturbs me, though, is that you could get someone in a position of power who is a state's attorney at a local level or whatever, and who is on a crusade, and pretty much you're screwed.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's a lot of ways they can write this in to get around it. I know the Supreme Court has said that the Second Amendment is not absolute. I don't know how much I agree with that, but to me, it is an absolute right. But the restrictions keep getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and you keep seeing it. I mentioned it, and I'll say it again. I have never seen a country that has so much freedoms right now that are getting slowly taking away, and it is allowing to happen because they're hiding under the guise of safety.
Well, and as a 68-year-old fart, I could tell you that the one thing no one can ever guarantee you is safety, because life in its inherent existence is dangerous.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you're the only one that can guarantee your own safety.
Right.
And you can't
do that if you don't have a gun.
Correct.
I'm sorry, I mean, but you can't.
You can't, especially if they're shooting at you. When things start to go
south
and things start popping off, I mean, you're going to want them.
Well, I've often told people, so I live in a county where it can take 30 plus minutes for any form of law enforcement to get to me.
Yeah.
Granted, it could be shorter, but there's days it's been longer. And if I have someone who's putting a boot to my door, I do not have a lot of faith in my ability to go, dude, I just dialed 911. It's going to be about 45 minutes. Can you hold that thought for sorry.
But that's what it is, though. And people are like, well, that's such an extreme. It's not. It's not. I mean, I live out in the middle of nowhere, too. I mean, maybe it's not 30 minutes, but it's 20 minutes. The fact is, if anybody who's ever had a concealed carry permit or taken any type of firearms training knows, it is 21 feet is the rules of engagement.
Yep.
If you are within 21 feet and that person is deemed a threat, you have 21 feet. That's not much. That's 7 yards. Like, that does not take long for somebody to get there. It is less than 1 second. And if, say, you are in that position and you do have to draw a firearm, you still have less than 1 second to get that gun out.
Well, Derek, I wish you had had a better result at the Supreme Court. I had my prayers going for you, but sometimes things work out. As I say, a lot of times the Lord works in mysterious ways. But if you had one thing to say about your experience and stuff, I know that eventually you will get your guns back because the final order is going to be released. But what would you have to say about everything that you've gone through?
I mean, I would say that I hope nobody has to go through it again. I mean, I would say, you know, one of my first times at Bismarck was kind of cool, but not for that reason. But you know, all joking aside, I mean, I hope nobody has to go through this. And if you do have to go through this, I am more than happy to help. I cannot provide legal advice, but I can still help. And I need people to understand that you have to fight. You have to keep fighting on this. And that goes for custody, firearms rights. And honestly, like this is the point where the fight is no longer having to come from court. It has to come from people like me and you to coming to get into legislators and get involved.
Absolutely. And I also would like to let people know just how fragile our rights are right now. There has never been, in my opinion, a more desperate time for us to wake up and realize that they are being taken away every single day. We're losing a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And Derek, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you very much. Keep up the fight wherever the Lord takes you. Everybody, it is Monday with another one in the can. Common Sense Uncensored. Bye-bye. God bless.